stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm talking about how to discover the obstacles that may have gotten between you and being who you really are, who you already are, even though you're not acting like it. I'm giving examples of ways in which people learned to avoid themselves, deny themselves, and then, having figured out what might be stopping you, I'm explaining about the relationship contract and how those unconscious contracts which you have signed on to may be stopping you, and what the price for becoming who you really are might be. Also, I'm airing an interview with Jennifer Logue, a lovely, talented, bright, exciting, young actor and founder of Mad Dog Theater Company in New York City. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovering who you really are. What does that mean? Well, it kind of means who you would have been if nothing had interrupted the natural evolution of whatever it is you came into life with. Whatever talents, skills, abilities, capacities, whatever, what would you have been like if nothing had gotten in the way? If no parent had gotten sick, if no sibling had been born before you, if you'd been a boy instead of a girl or a girl instead of a boy, if your parents had had some feeling about what it meant to be a boy or a girl that didn't have anything to do with who you were, if you were not the first child or the last child, if you didn't look like your mother's uncle who everybody hated, if you hadn't gotten sick very young and gotten a reputation as somebody who was sick, if your parents had been well and happy, not divorced, not gotten sick, not been alcoholic, not fought with each other, these are the kinds of things that happen in one way or another to everybody. So, in my experience as a psychotherapist, and I have lots of it, having been in practice for 30 years or so, and I suppose this is the time for me to say that I am currently in private practice entirely on the telephone. And if you are curious about what phone therapy is like, you can go up on my website. Well, actually, if you're curious about me, and if you're curious about the kinds of things I talk about, which mostly exist in the book I wrote, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. So if you want to know about me, if you want to know about the book, if you want to know about phone therapy, there's an article that I wrote about phone therapy called Psychotherapy on the Go. And all of these things and more things about me. Oh, and the old podcasts of the show. So if you're relatively new to the show, or if you've been listening for a long time but you remember that I said something in an old show that you would like to hear again, the podcasts for all the last 3 years are up on that website. I am in the process of updating the website, so if you've been there before, you might want to take another look, see how I've changed it, and how it is going to be changed in the future. The website is thelynshow.com, thelynnesshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com. There is apparently another The Lynn Show, and you you won't find out what I think about why we all have placed parts of ourselves out of reach. That is, that we are in denial for so many things that we could have done, could have been, because they hit obstacles like the ones I was talking about a few minutes ago. So let's say that you had the capacity to be a really terrific athlete. Let's say you have an athlete's body, right? And a terrific amount of energy and great coordination. And this is just a gift of being you. This comes with the territory of that body that you got. But you had a mother who was very, very frightened that something bad would happen to you, and so she didn't let you play games, or she stood on the sideline going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, or she actually punished you when she caught you with a ball or whatever. So you can see how what you might have been, could have been, actually are, could have become too dangerous. None of us wants to upset, scare, anger, offend, depress, frighten our parents. And so in this, just in this one instance, this little boy or girl would have grown up shying away from something that could have, and in my belief system, should have given that little boy and girl a tremendous amount of pleasure. Never mind that it could have felt like the thing, right? Home, who I really am. And it's not only that this little boy or girl that I'm talking about doesn't get to experience that, the pleasure of something that would have been so easy for him or her, but such a person may always feel a little bit out of sync, never quite find what feels like home, what feels like me. So that's just one example. In my practice, I run over and over and over into people who have had experiences in their childhood that suggest to them that they are not, or should not, or cannot be what they already are. And sometimes you can even see it. Sometimes a person is quite beautiful, but they don't believe it. That is because they were either not told, or they were told they were not, or they were told that vanity is a sin, and to speak of yourself or think of yourself as beautiful is a dreadful thing and will bring down a parent's, criticism, condemnation, maybe even punishment, right? So such a person will deny absolutely what is blatantly clear to anybody with eyes. And this can be true about lots and lots and lots of things. I had a client who, very, very capable, very, very talented, very, very smart, but felt that this was not true. And one of the ways that she managed to get in her way so that she didn't have to demonstrate how smart she was or how capable she was that she created a problem. She just couldn't get anywhere on time. And this inability to get places on time made her seem like a flake, not only to herself, but to everybody else. Now, why would a person with real talent, real capacity do that? Well, she had parents who wanted to have a dependent child. She had parents who were so in love with the idea of being parents that they only wanted to take care of their little girl. And they felt so good when they were taking care of their little girl. And when it looked like their little girl could take care of herself, they felt like they weren't needed. What happened to their job? What happened to their life? What were they going to do now? So every time that little girl showed signs of her capacity, they let her know in no uncertain terms that that was not all right. And even now, when she was married, they would slip her money on the side so that she could do little things for herself and didn't have to be completely dependent on her husband. And, of course, so that she would always know that she could be and would be forever dependent on her parents. Now, our unconscious makes these decisions. It knows what's going on. So let's just take this example of this young woman. Her unconscious learned very early that any expression of her ability brought unpleasantness. So it started to hide her ability from her. And it created this problem about getting places on time so that she was never in danger of having to accept, recognize, dare I say, enjoy who she really is. Now, of course, that became the subject of the work that we did in therapy. That's what therapy is about. Well, one of the things therapy is about, and for me, one of the major things that therapy is about. Of course, people come into therapy expressing things they want to do differently. So this young woman came into therapy expressing that she needed to do something about this time management problem because it was making it impossible for her to pursue her career. However, once we started to look at because I believe that problems serve functions. You don't create a problem unless it's doing something for you. And, of course, we can always see the way it's getting in our way. That's why people bring these problems into therapy. But we can't always see how it's acting in our interest. So as we began to explore the circumstances in which she was late, the circumstances in which she managed to get there on time, and most especially her early life experiences, her relationship with her parents, and parenthetically her relationship with her husband. Because he was another one who liked the caretaking role. And he thought it was adorable that he had this charming, really talented but somewhat flaky wife who needed his care. So at this point in the work, I explained to this young woman about the relationship contract. Now, I have talked in other shows about the relationship contract, but I'm going to talk about it again today. I believe whenever you establish a relationship, any relationship, parent-child, siblings, friends, neighbors, employees, spouses, anything, both parties to this relationship sign on to a contract. It's not written. It's not even verbally expressed. In fact, we are mostly unconscious for it, and it only has one clause. And that clause is, I'll be who I am, and you be who you are. So in the case of this little girl, her contract with her parents was, the clause in her relationship contract was, we will be big and strong and loving and kind and take such good care of you, and you will need us. And her part was, I will need you and love you and appreciate the good care you take of me. And not surprisingly, she had signed on to a similar contract with her husband. Now, the problem with this is that if we decide we don't want to be bound by that in this woman's case, her inability to get places on time was making it impossible for her to be successful in any way in her life. And she badly wanted to be successful in her life. But if she licked this problem, if she managed to get places on time, and then managed to demonstrate, which would have been really easy for her ability, then yes, she would definitely be successful. And in doing that, she would break the relationship contract with her husband and her parents. Now, when you change, as I'm describing this change for this young woman, you are seen to be breaking the contract. Now, all of this, of course, is going on unconsciously. Nobody is talking about this. No one is saying, you've broken the contract. You're successful now. But everybody feels it. It feels to all those other people with whom you have extensive these contracts. And, of course, the longer the contract has been enforced, the tighter you're bound to it. The other people feel like you have betrayed them, like you have broken the contract. They have not changed. They continue to want it to be the way it was. And in cases like the parents or the husband, in this case, as she began to get more capable, to demonstrate what already was there, and that's, of course, the important piece, that it was already there, right? As she began to demonstrate this and to do better and better, first, they began to up the ante, offer more. More money, more vacations, more whatever it is she wanted. They were, you don't have to do this, honey. We'll take care of you. We'll get you this. We'll get you that. As she resisted that and continued to become herself, and, of course, to some extent, being in therapy continually was a backstop for her. Because the pressure to revert, to go back to the old contract, is very, very strong, not only from these other people, but from yourself, because it feels right. Mm-hmm. But she was able, in this particular case, she was able to continue to pursue her career, to show up on time, to demonstrate her skill. Then people start to get mad. They don't know why they're mad, but they're mad. And sometimes relationships don't survive this. In fact, I have had in my practice several times people who are friends with each other, groups of people actually, who are in relationship with one another. And I warn them all, as I warn everybody, that as you begin to make this change that you badly want, you will inevitably be breaking relationship contracts, and in some cases, breaking relationship contracts with people who have been very important to you. And I have seen friendships end over just this experience, that one person really changes and the old contract no longer feels good to them, and the other person cannot change complementarily. And so after desperately trying to get person number one back in all kinds of ways, and people are very clever, they can enlist other people to call and say, you know, such and such is so worried about you, you seem to be distancing, or you seem to be changing, or why are you doing this? There are all kinds of ways people try and rope you back into the relationship contract. But if you hang tough, one of the things that can happen is that the other people will not be able to be in the relationship anymore. And it is my belief that that is one of the reasons that people don't change. Because our unconsciouses all know that if we change in a significant way, we are in danger of breaking relationship contracts, and that when we break them, we may also lose the people that we have had these contracts with. So, this is one of the very, very, very good reasons that people don't overcome the problems which they believe are haunting them. This woman's problem, demonstrated problem, was that she couldn't get anywhere on time. But as you certainly know, all kinds of problems. People stay in dead-end jobs when they don't want to be there anymore. People stay in relationships that have long since stopped serving them. People don't go back to school because they don't believe they can, well, or because it will be breaking relationship contracts with all the people who need them to stay uneducated. People don't stand up for themselves when they have every right to. People don't ask for what they deserve because they don't know they can. I could go on forever, right? In 30 years, I've heard, well, lots and lots and lots of things that get between people and being who they already are. And that's, of course, the point here, that I'm not talking about developing something that you are not, that you have to learn or build or struggle with or something. I'm talking about who you really are, who you already are, but have had to deny, have had to place, as I like to call it, undercover, and act out a cover story. The cover story is you saying, this is not me. Those things are not me. All these things are me, but that thing is not me. Because that thing I have had to put undercover. Like this woman had to put her capacity undercover. Her skill, her talent. Like the young woman, boy or girl that I was talking about earlier who had to put their amazing physical abilities undercover. So, what's your cover story? What have you left out of your idea of who you are? What's undercover for you? Do you know? Maybe you don't know what's undercover, but you know what's getting in the way. You know what the problem is. So, in the last few shows, I have been talking about an exercise called the family pie, which is one of the ways that you can discover what you have undercover. And when you discover that, then it's not a big leap to discovering what your relationship contracts say and who they're with. I will continue to talk about this because this is what the Lynn Show is all about. The other thing I do in my show is, besides talk about this, is I play interviews that I did with people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do this because we live in a culture that doesn't support the arts, doesn't encourage the arts. We call it playing. You're in a play. You're playing an instrument. We don't take it seriously. parents who are just delighted to see their little boy or girl dancing or singing or drawing are horrified if they say they want to do it for a living. So when someone dedicates their life or makes their living or tries to make their living with an art in our culture, it is because they have no choice. It is who they are. It's not undercover. It's not a cover story. It is who they are, because they do it against all odds. When you listen to people who have dedicated their life to an art, you can hear it. It's very clear. And I play these interviews so you can hear it. So you can hear what it sounds like when people are, the psychobabble term for it is congruent. That is, that they are demonstrating what they really are. Who they are and what they do, it's one and the same. Today I'm interviewing a young woman named Jennifer Logue. If you listen to my interviews, you know that I interview a lot of people who work at, in one way or another, the Oslo Repertory Company in Sarasota, Florida. Oslo has not only a repertory company, but it has a conservatory, a teaching wing, where people work for 3 years to develop their acting craft. And Jennifer is one of these. She graduated, I don't remember, but it's probably in the interview. And then she went to New York, where she and other graduates have begun the Mad Dog Theater Company. Jennifer is a wonderful example of someone who had to do what she is being and doing. And you hear it. It's right at the beginning of the interview. She starts right out telling me how early this became clear to her and everybody else. And you can hear the delight, the joy, the pleasure, the passion, the excitement, the congruence in this young woman. And so I want you to listen not only to the interview, but if you happen to be going to New York sometime in November, the Mad Dog Theater Company is putting on their very first production. I believe that it's running November 10th to the 19th. I might have that slightly wrong, but Jennifer's going to say what it is. So here, the irrepressible, very much herself, Jennifer Logue.
So I'm here with Jennifer Logue, who is a member of the Mad Dog Theater Company. Mm-hmm. And I'm about to tell Jennifer what I do and ask her the question I always ask everybody. I interview people who make their living or their life within art. That you qualify, right?
Definitely be me.
Right, yes. Good. Okay, so the question I ask everybody is, how did it happen?
How did it happen? It happened probably 4, but really 13.
4? What happened at 4?
4 was when I was put into a bunny costume and was thrust out onto a stage by my preschool teacher, and applause happened, and that was it.
And you remember it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Wow, okay. So at 4, you had the theatrical experience which said, this is a good thing.
This is it.
Yeah, oh, this is it, even.
This is it.
Oh, this is it. I love it. Okay. So now, your preschool teacher did this. Your parents did not have a, or they didn't.
Well, I mean, if you see the videotapes of me as a kid,
yes,
they would kind of set up a video camera for me, and there's footage upon footage, hours and hours of me performing. And so much that my cousins and my brother would come in, and I would shove them out of the way to make sure that I was still. I mean, it's really hilarious because you'll see me at 4 years old just, you know, either doing mock commercials where I'll pick up whatever was on the table, my grandfather's reading glasses, and sell that. I would come in with my grandmother's nightgown on and sing songs. I mean, it happened at a very young age.
Clearly it was
hilarious.
It was clear to you and apparently to everybody else.
Okay. Our family reunions are hilarious. We go over this footage and it's just...
And okay, all right, great. So so you sort of came in with it. I mean, okay. It was, right? Okay, good. Okay. So what happened at 13?
At 13, I was, it was 15.
Ah.
My best friend Erica, who was a dancer, said, I'm going to try out for the High School Musical over the summer, which is Bye Bye Birdie. And she said, I really think you should come. And I was like, I don't know. She said, no, come. So I was like, all right. So I go and I audition, kind of just because Erica was there.
Yeah.
and got up on stage and didn't even have anything prepared.
What did you do?
I ended up singing Happy Birthday like Marilyn Monroe because I worshipped her. And I got the lead. Hilarious. Kind of like my career, to be honest with you. It's like, yeah, you should do this.
Tell me. So, okay, 15 now, we get confirmation, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, not only is this it for me, but they seem to think so, too.
Exactly.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. So, did you then pursue it in some way?
Oh, yes. And then I basically couldn't stay out of the theater.
Tell me.
It was president of drama club, went to every competition that had anything to do with acting, was involved in every production the high school put on, including my church productions or, anything that I could find that involved theater I was involved in. Yeah. And also was in choir, show choir, which is a big deal right now, I believe, but I was like a nerd when it wasn't cool to be in show choir or being in show choir. Mm-hmm. And I got a scholarship to Florida Atlantic University through the show choir and was accepted to the theater department there. So I decided to actually get my degree, my Bachelor of Fine Arts in theater. And it was fabulous going into Florida Atlantic University. It was very life-changing because I was around a lot of amazing professors that really...
Who took it seriously.
Took it very seriously and were just very, very kind.
Kind.
Allowed us to kind of fall on our faces, allowed us to be silly, allowed us to make mistakes. And learn from those mistakes. It was a lot of empathy.
No judgment.
Oh,
how amazing.
It was rare. I've never found it since. As far as the training. For such young people to go through it, it's pretty amazing.
It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it allows you to evolve.
Absolutely. As I get older, too, realizing that that's what I, and as we probably talk later on about, my theater company wanting to create that atmosphere again.
Yeah. Okay, so... this is how it looks to me, that like it was sort of, you were kind of impelled, right? But it wasn't really until you got into university that it became kind of a serious, that maybe I could actually
do this. Definitely. I think too because it was like, oh right, it's not just me and Charlie from next door who lives with me, or lives next door to me, that we're going to put on by Birdie and kind of half it
right,
rehearsals
right.
And no, this was real professional. We did summer stock, which is equity. So we learned about what equity meant, what the rules meant, how to take it seriously, how to treat acting like a business.
As a business. That's just what I was thinking, is that you really saw that it could be, and then you learned how to do it. That's
sure.
Terrific.
And did everything from stage managing, lighting design, set construction, to being on stage. So a pretty well-rounded undergrad program.
Okay, so undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
Well, I think because I had such a beautiful experience in undergrad and thought, like every...
Oh, you thought this was it, right?
...does, that I am going to do this.
Oh, you were ready.
And I'm going to move to New York. And
you were in Florida.
I was. And as soon as I step off that bus, yes. Martin Scorsese is going to just snatch me right up.
Right. I have been waiting for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'm still waiting.
Well, so is Martin.
So is Martin. We're getting there.
Yeah, right.
And then moved to New York and proceeded to have a bit of a shell shock. Because when I moved to New York, I was here for about 6 months and auditioned and found a lovely bar job, as you do as an actor, which luckily was in an Irish pub and got kind of adopted by the Irish community, who put up with me putting on theater in the bar. Because I was like, if I'm not getting a show, then I'm putting on my own.
Oh, my God.
Then had a pretty fruitful stand-up career, actually, at Caroline's and Stand Up New York and Gotham. Mm-hmm. Loved doing that. But definitely a shell shock because then 9/11 had happened. So it was an interesting time because I had to make a big decision. And I remember speaking to my grandfather, who's my mentor, and saying, should I stay? And he said, well, are you ready to give up on your dream or not? And I said, I'm not. And he said, then stay.
Good guy.
Yeah, completely wonderful. And believe me, he wanted to armored car come up here, put me in it, and take me back home. So I have a really supportive, lovely family.
That's wonderful.
Who said stay. And so stuck it out for a while up there. And then ended up getting married in between all of this to my lovely husband. And funnily enough, we decided to move back to Florida because my husband got an opportunity to open up a restaurant, as all the Irish do. They open up their own bar. And I thought that would be great because I knew I wanted to get further training. I wanted to get a master's degree.
Right.
And the restaurant was in Lakewood Ranch.
Ah!
And And I knew of the Oslo because my grandfather would take me to each show diligently every season. So I thought, you know what, I've always wanted to get my master's from there, and this is perfect. Connor can have the bar restaurant, and I can go to grad school. So that's what brought me back down to Florida.
Wow.
To the lovely Oslo.
So then you
did the other chapter.
Well, tell me.
Loved the Oslo when I was, especially when I was a kid. Again, it was another one of those really great institutions that put on some pretty amazing work. And where the Oslo was definitely different is I think because it's a master's program, it's like, okay, let's go boot camp. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. We're going to churn and burn them. We're going to put you through Tale of Two Cities, which is going to possibly go to Broadway. We're going to have you work with amazing directors. We're going to have you work with Patsy Rodenberg in London, which was absolutely one of those defining moments, not only in my career, but my life, was to work with her.
Wow.
She's a real powerhouse. I mean, she's Judi Dench's acting mm-hmm. coach and refines. And she walks in the room, and all of a sudden you go, right, great lady, you're going to sit down and maybe listen a little bit to what you have to say to me. And she was great. She gave me a lot of confidence and a lot of great tools. And the Oslo was great, not only just from a training perspective, but I have amazing donors.
Yeah, you know, explain how that works.
Basically, these lovely people of the community of Sarasota donate money to the Oslo, and in turn, it's basically as if they're sending us through our master's program.
Yeah, right.
And the cool part about it is you're assigned a particular donor your first year. And they're your extended family through the 3 years you go there.
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing program.
It's amazing for that. A testament to what it is to be a patron.
Okay, so now you've gone through the program,
mm-hmm.
and so now what?
And then during, side note, our restaurant didn't work out. My career did. So we moved back to New York, my husband and I. And funnily enough, I still have my hands in a lot of theater, mainly of my own creation. It's about what I decided, not that I'm an old lady or anything, but I kind of have an old lady mentality of no one's going to tell me what to do. I'm doing my own theater, and I kind of got really...
Forgive me, but it sounds like you had this at four.
I did.
Right.
Well, I kind of have this little bit of an attitude that I kept hearing, well, Jen, it's the business.
Yeah.
Jen, it's the business. Oh, if the director treats you like that, it's the business. Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't like that show? It's the business. And I was a little bit, and I won't use colorful language on your show, but I was a little bit like, you, about
yeah,
business.
Right.
I'm creating my own business. Uh-huh. I'm creating my own business, which is the business of yes.
Oh,
which is the business of, you want to put something on, and we believe in it, let's do it. And that was kind of the attitude I had, and been cultivating my own theater ever since I got out of grad school. In turn, with my really amazing, as I call it, big girl job, I'm a part of a company called Working Voices, which is a global interpersonal communication skills company.
Ah!
And we're kind of a big deal.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah.
I love it. It's beautiful. We go into major businesses such as Deutsche Bank, J.P. Morgan, Barclays Capital. It's kind of the scale of businesses mm-hmm. we're dealing with. And we teach everything from presentation skills to emotional intelligence and to interpersonal communication skills.
Lovely.
So I'm kind of a part of Wall Street.
Oh, how funny.
It's
very funny. Funny. Talk about one foot in one world and another foot in the other world.
You bet. Although my acting has...
No kidding.
You bet. It
right.
basically
right.
is the train.
You brought this foot into that world.
You bet.
Right.
And it's been beautiful because you help somebody. I mean, because as you know, there's the number one fear is public speaking. Number two is death. And if it was one thing I didn't have a problem doing, as you...
Know, yeah, clearly, right.
In front
right.
of people. So I said, well, maybe I can help people with this. And it's been really great to be able to change people and
make
them.
A living doing it.
You bet.
Yeah, right, right.
And
it's supporting your habits, so to speak.
Exactly, because again, with that, again, my attitude of it's the business, well, you got to be able to supplement that kind of attitude, and I do.
Yeah, you need to be able to, good for you.
Yeah.
So many people don't, you know, they just have the attitude, but they don't have that other thing that you seem to have.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So at the same time that you are a working woman mm-hmm. in the working world, mm-hmm. you have created the Mad Dog Theater. Is that correct?
Yes, myself along with my other lovely members of Mad Dog, which all of them come from the Oslo.
Now, are they all from your class?
Not all of them. I think I'm the oldest class member. And then Kevin O'Callaghan, Brent Bateman, Heather Kelly were all members of one class.
Are they all Irish?
Below me. I know, it sounds like we are. It's like we didn't let them in unless
yeah,
they're
right,
Irish.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. You just threw at me. I didn't realize that. Actually, we're not all of us.
I know, just...
Faye Akbar, there you go.
Yeah, right. Not Irish. Right.
Not Irish.
No.
He's in the next, so it would be my year, Kevin Brent, Heather's years, and then Gefei's year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joel, who is a directing student mm-hmm. at the ASA MFA student, is also thrown in there. So, and then there's Nicole, who actually worked at the ASA, Nicole Samsel, and she's amazing, an opera singer. And so we have a wide variety of people in the theater company with a wide variety of backgrounds.
How many people are in the company?
Let's see, Brent, Heather, Kevin, Faye, Joel, Nicole, myself, so seven.
Seven, wow, okay.
And that's not including, like, I'm sure that the extended members
family.
Of, but that's the core
right.
group that started it.
And when did you start it?
We started this, actually, it's been on the burner for about a year, but it hit the ground running about 3 months ago.
And did you raise money?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
But we need more.
Yes, I'm sure. You can't.
Not to be tacky.
No, and you can't. Right. No, absolutely. Okay. So you did, you know, it's okay if you want to read the mission statement.
Well, I do want to read the mission statement.
Please do.
The hilarious thing about Mad Dog is that we are unpredictable, that is for sure, but we're also very collaborative. And we had such a good time trying
coming
to come
up with
our mission statement
that's right.
that I feel like I need to read it because it's a gem. Now, it's ever-evolving, like
you, right.
And so Mad Dog's mission statement is a group of artists who tell stories. We believe the best way to do this is to make the stories our own. Stories that are funny, ferocious, unlikely, sexy, rough, inconvenient, loud, unsightly, and ultimately provoke questions. We are committed to producing new work and strive for passionate collaboration from inception through performance. We welcome the possibility of creating a monster. If we do, we'll smile, shake its many hands, and offer it some enchilada lasagna. I'm sure you're wondering about the enchilada lasagna.
Doesn't sound very Irish.
No. We drink like the Irish.
I got it. But do you eat like the Spanish Italians?
We eat like the Spanish, yes.
Right.
We're very well
cultured. Yeah, you're eclectic. Great. That's great. It's terrific. So is this your first show that's coming up?
This will be our premiere show, yes.
Okay, so tell us.
It's all the way from China. And it's brilliant because Barry Levy is a playwright who is amazing. And we're so excited because this will be his first premiere of this particular production.
Wow.
Here in New York. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful, very thought-provoking show. And that'll star Gefei, Kevin, and Heather.
Can you just tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. I can actually tell you I could read you the synopsis where I can
Do.
Go in. 1 year after his girlfriend was killed on campus, Yale dropout Jack holes up in Austin with a temp job, a guitar, and an underachieving rich girl who toys with smack. The anniversary of the unsolved murder brings Jack a stream of fresh torments, renewed media attention, additional police interviews, and weirdest of all, a man named Ralph who arrives at Jack's door with urgent information. All the Way from China explores how we hoard or share our grief and asks how close must we be to a tragedy to be entitled to mourn it. Is grief a process of communal healing or competition for personal attention? And how far will we go to feel included? Pretty sexy stuff.
Yeah, and pretty serious stuff.
It is serious, but just like Mad Dog, even though we might take a serious topic, it's going to be a little off the wall. You're going to laugh and...
Great.
Just like you do in life, you're going to laugh, cry, and all the rest of it.
So, did you know Barry Levy, or did he come out of the...
Yes, he's in a part of the Mad Dog, big...
Extended family, right.
You bet. He's very talented. It's a beautiful play. And what I like about it is I think it's a lot of the reasons we pick plays is why this play now, and we felt it was very relevant and kind of the media-saturated... We're so involved in each other's lives, even with, like, the Jersey Shore. I know everything that goes on with people, and I feel dumber for it, but I still watch it. But the idea of questioning who's allowed to grieve, I thought was pretty amazing. I like that it kind of really dives into that in this show. And obviously, the writing's beautiful, and those actors, Kevin Giffey and Heather are just, they're amazing.
I should say that I also have an interview of Giffey, and I will play it either before, well, I'll probably play it after yours, so everyone will know who he is when I do it.
Giffey, you know, watch him. He's I mean, he's already a star in my eyes. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he'll be a star.
He's amazing.
He's special.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's very special.
And it's a wonderful interview, too. So stay tuned.
You're right. As Heather and Kevin, I mean, all of us have our such unique things that we bring to the company, which is why, again, when I talked about that's the business, this was why I was so excited about this particular theater company. Each of us are very unique and bring something very special to the table. We're all so supportive of each other. It's that young thing I was talking about. You know, I can fall on my face in front of these people, and they're gonna be there for me.
Yeah, that's invaluable, not only in theater, pretty much anywhere, right? And you're very, I was gonna say you're lucky to get it, but I don't think that's luck. I think that you create it if that's who you are.
Yeah, that was something we talked about. This is gonna be a lot of hard work, but you know, we plan on having this no matter what. This is ours.
So how? Do the seven of you choose the piece?
We do.
So everybody reads it, and then it's thumbs up or thumbs down?
Kind of, yeah. We bring a lot of stuff to the table. We have a 3-show season. This just happens to be the first.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be 2 other shows.
Do you know what they are already?
Right now we're working with a playwright right now on, I don't have the title of it yet, but it's going to be one that's devised strictly for Mad Dog, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I do know the subject matter is going to be about a lesbian couple, kind of contemplating whether they should adopt a baby, I believe.
Yet again, timely.
Totally timely.
Right.
Totally timely. It's all over the place.
Right.
It's pretty exciting. There's also a play called Deconstruction, which is going to be kind of an off-the-wall play about Andy Kaufman. And several different actors will be playing Andy Kaufman.
Really?
And that's going to, possibly one being a woman, so I'm pretty excited.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, anyone I know?
We'll see.
I can see it. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
I know.
Yeah,
we'll talk to the company.
Yeah. I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking you could do it. Wow, amazing.
It's hilarious for me because comedy is my heart for sure.
Ever since the bunny.
I get poor Jim Carrey, though, because it is our heart, but every comedy actor wants to be like playing Hamlet, really. But I can't wait. I just am so excited about the company and the fact that we have new playwrights, that we're not just... You know, we're also helping other people get their career going.
Yeah.
And working with it. It's amazing.
It's amazing. Okay, so is there anything I didn't ask you that I should have asked you?
I think, besides the fact that I think, you know, I'm going to send you this, but all the way from China will be from November 10th through the 21st.
Yes, you might as well say it all.
November 10th through the 21st. Performances will be held at the Jean Frankel Theater, located at 24 Bond Street. Bond and Lafayette are the cross streets on that.
In Manhattan.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes,
in the NYC.
In the NYC is exactly right.
And to definitely keep on to www.maddogbarks.com because we need donations.
Okay, wait. It's www.maddogbarks. Barks, B-A-R-K-S.
You bet.
As in woof, woof.
Mm-hmm.
MaddogBarks.com.
That's right.
Very nice.
And that will be where we have all of our show announcements. That's how you can donate. That's where you can see extensive bios on who we are, our mission statement. We've got some pretty wild photos up there.
I'll bet.
That's where all our information is.
How did you come to the name?
That's on the website.
It's on the website.
I think that's the way we came about our name. It's definitely on the website.
All right, don't tell.
I think that's a secret.
Don't tell. Oh, really?
We kind of are wondering if people can... It was a nickname of one of the Oslo people. But I kind of am tongue-in-cheek about it because everybody thinks it's them. So I'm like, yeah, it was totally
Yeah, you're you. That's great.
Depending on how much they're donating. Definitely
you. That's great. All right, the last question I always ask is, as you said, you're not that old, but you have essentially lived your life with this passion for performance.
Definitely.
Right. So I just ask if there's anything you want to say about what that's like, anything at all that crosses your mind about what it's like to have offered a life.
Sure. It's... It's, you know, somebody was talking, I was talking to a very close friend of mine about what it's like to love art, or what it's like to love acting. And it's a little bit like a marriage. It's like a relationship. You know, sometimes it cheats on you with other people. You know, sometimes when you're talking to other people, you're like, oh, so they called you?
They called you?
They called you. They haven't called me. What does that mean? Okay. And then you're married to it and you're in love with it and it's like that beautiful, like, oh yes, all we do is sit in bed and watch TV with each other and we write poetry about each other and I'm so in love with it right now. And sometimes it's like a marriage where you're like, I really can't stand that you right now.
Right.
If you could never look at me again. In fact, I'm never talking to you again.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh no, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It is nuanced just like a marriage. It is the other relationship.
That is so wonderful. You know what I've been thinking since you've been talking? Do you know the score from Company?
Oh yeah, I love it.
Sorry, Grateful?
Yes.
That's what it sounds like, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's, a friend of mine also said it's about sitting in the dark and watching people in the light. And when I was young, I was like, oh my God, that's so pretentious. But I was like, actually, it's not. It is a little, and sometimes I'm the person in the dark looking at it in the light, and sometimes I'm the person in the light looking at people in the dark.
Yeah.
And I mean that by every sense. Sometimes it's about enlightening people. Sometimes it is about staying in the dark. Sometimes it is, like I said, with Brief Encounter, where I become an audience.
It changes your life.
It changes me.
Right. So, I wanted to say something about that, and it's absolutely gone out of my head.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. In a marriage, however, you can leave. Is that how it feels?
You know, at one point I tried and couldn't, so it's not ever going to leave.
Yeah, I think that's very... I think that
It is like a relationship in the sense of having a lover like it, but it is like your family where
your
brother's always your brother.
Right.
And you can't choose your family.
You love him, you don't love him, yeah, he's always... Yes.
And you can't choose who you love, you know?
No.
And it just happens.
Yes.
So that's the way it is for me, for sure.
Yeah, it's great, and it's a perfect place to stop. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
This was lovely, and thank Ava for...
Your brother's always your brother, and you can't choose who you love. If that's not a way of saying, this is who I am, there's nothing I can do about it. This is the truth about me. This is the bottom line about me. And I have known it since I was 4. And nobody told me different. Nobody said, don't do that, don't be that, don't have that, don't know yourself. In Jennifer's case, she was lucky enough to have a family who celebrated what she did naturally, easily, celebrated who she was. Not everybody gets that. You know, and as she said, even though she knew her family wanted to come in an armored car, pick her up and take her home and protect her from herself, they honored who she was. She didn't have that obstacle put between herself and herself. So I'm hoping that as you listen to this, as always, as you listen to these stories, you are thinking, what got between me and myself? Did something? Is there a something about me that I am not able to celebrate? And if that is so, don't do anything about it. Don't start making trouble for yourself by yelling at yourself or being mad at whoever it was or whatever circumstance put the obstacle in your path. I promise you, that will not fix it. I'm going to talk more about the way to recover, the danger of recovery, why it's hard to do, and why yelling at yourself or criticizing yourself or being mad at someone else, actually, is not going to do it. And now, let me thank once again, as I do this time in every show, thank the intrepid Josh Hackney, who can do anything, anything that has anything to do with electronics, recording, the web, computers, sound, you name it. Josh can either knows it, knows how to do it, or he knows how to figure out how to do it. In my view, a more invaluable skill. So, he knows how to do the things I don't know how to do. He knows how to do the things I used to know how to do but have forgotten. He knows how to do the things he taught me to do, which I can't seem to get a hold on. And he knows how to do them long distance by walking me through it on the phone or coming here and fixing it, showing me, and to do it with kindness, which in my view is an irreplaceable quality. So if you have any issues with any of this, you have any questions, you have any needs, who you want is Josh Hackney, and you can get him, as you can get me, at my website, thelinshow.com. Please remember to add the E to Lynn, thelinshow, thelinshow.com. And as I said in the beginning, you can get me, you can find out about the book, you can hear the old podcasts, you can listen to this show, although probably not going to be up there for a little while. And, as always, I am hoping that you heard something in this show that you can use, something that stimulated you, piqued your curiosity, something you didn't know, or something you knew but had forgotten, something that will bring you back. Because, as always, I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I freeze? Get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. On ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten